We are back with the fourth podcast of the mini-series. Today, I've got Jessica Kennedy with me. Oddly enough, this is the Limerick representation part of the programme. Myself and Jessica actually went to primary school and secondary school together, so there's an awful lot of background there, I guess.
Yeah, there is.
So I suppose today it's actually very interesting because Jess is the co-founder of not one but two platforms, Gabadoo and My OT and Me. So Jess, would you like to introduce yourself to everybody and explain what it is you do?
Sure. So hi, everyone. And yeah, so I'm Jess Kennedy. My background is I went to UCC initially and I studied occupational therapy and science. So I'm an occupational therapist. That's my trade, my background. And I suppose when I started working in this area, I've always loved working with families, children, young people. I went to Australia for a while. And when I came home, unfortunately, I could see the waiting list already in the public system. You know, there was issues with kind of accessing intervention services from an occupational therapist. And so for anyone listening who's like, what do you do? I suppose that's a big question. We work on kind of everyday function and well-being for people. So some occupational therapists or OTs might work in mental health. They might work in neurology or with adults. I specifically work with children and young people. And so with that comes like everyday functioning. So it could be dressing, feeding, school-related skills, toileting, sleep, anything that really affects their well-being is goal-orientated, is purposeful, is meaningful. And so obviously that relates to pretty much everyone, particularly for children that might have some additional needs. They might be neurodivergent. They might have, you know, school-based learning needs. And so I suppose once there was like a little bit more understanding of what we do, suddenly parents were feeling, well, I need to access this for my kids. The waiting lists got out of hand really inside the public system. And so now even to access OT services, there may not be an OT on the team. It could be 5 years, it could be 3 years, totally dependent on where you are in the country. So I suppose when I came back, I wanted to kind of move into that private sector. I'd already worked in the private sector in Australia because I love intervention, bread and butter, nitty gritty, working with the families, getting into their home environments and, you know, doing that real kind of meaningful work. On the ground work rather than kind of admin and waiting lists and assessments. So came back, was working with a clinic, and then My OT and Me kind of just came from that. And so lots of parents were saying to me, oh, you're constantly teaching, you know, like tying shoelaces, or you're, you know, giving us great tips about kind of like dressing skills. And they were like, do you have a video of it that you could share? And so that kind of got me thinking about using social media platforms. And I set up YouTube and Facebook initially, and it was basically just me sharing resources. And still the kids absolutely that I work with love my claim to fame that I've the most watched tying shoelaces video on YouTube. So that's we get a lot of people, a lot of traffic on that, so it's great. And so like that kind of just got it rolling around how I could see there was a need for this type of information. Mm-hmm. Parents were craving this kind of like practical, solution focused advice. And so my clinical work came out of My OT and Me. I moved to the private sector entirely by myself in 2018, where I did home-based intervention for families, as well as doing all the kind of online bits that I had been. So that was kind of like building towards, I suppose, what ultimately became Gabadoo. But My OT and Me has continued to evolve as well. So we, I suppose, started with that education of parents. We have a number of resources around that. We also have a research-backed motor skills program that we built out through telehealth. So kids get all the activities at home. They follow videos that I've done. It's called Octobox. And so that actually was launched just before COVID. So that was really interesting because all of a sudden schools were like looking for resources to, you know, be sent out to home. So it was good timing. But we kind of just, I suppose, from that, we could just see there was such a hunger from schools as well around that online piece. And so My OT and Me now is still focused on supporting families. We still have all those resources. But it's more around that kind of CPD, that professional development for educators, for ANAs, for SETs in school, so that not only are they getting that curriculum-based professional development, but now they're also getting, how do I increase independence for a child? How do I, you know, make my classroom sensory informed for my neurodivergent students? How can I be more inclusive, differentiate? And I suppose that's where we come in. So that collaborative process is really nice, I think, amongst OTs and school staff. And so my OTME is still going and we're really busy with all of that CPD, and it kind of funded Gabadoo. You know, COVID hit and myself and my husband were supposed to get married and we were twiddling our thumbs and we love a project. So Gabadoo kind of came from that around how could we maybe increase accessibility in a more scalable way where families could come onto a platform, they could be linked with a therapist who had time to give, and we could kind of do that parent coaching piece, that support piece online. And so we started building out Gabadoo, and we have a brilliant software engineer that works with us. And so we started to trial, and I think that's the space that's tricky in all of this. Technically, you know, it's healthcare. And so with Gabadoo is different to my OTME in that we provide OT and speech and language therapy services, but it's slow progressing. And I think that has to be taken on board. And we kind of knew that because of my clinical experience, but we've seen other companies take on huge investment and actually, unfortunately, go bust or has been, because you kind of have to move in stages of like piloting a service, seeing how that works, refining, pivoting, changing. And so over the last number of years, we've been doing that. And we kind of have been trying to get that product, you know, market fit, really. And we feel kind of we're there now in that Gabadoo is now really focused on providing OT and SLT consultation services to schools. So in the natural setting of the child, the school will identify the need. They can book in video consultations with a lead therapist who can develop that relationship with the school, but can guide the teachers on supporting that child within the classroom environment. So it could be something like understanding, you know, a child's needs, developing their handwriting. And from that, we can also involve the parent. So it's a nice referral route for the parents, or parents can come on the platform and just book in a consultation when they need it. So we find that kind of needs basis works really nicely. And it's something that is not provided, obviously, by the public system, because they just don't have the resources. And I suppose that was a big piece for me being the clinical side of this, is that the issue often is, how do we find an OT or an SLT? You know, they're like gold dust, but really I felt there are those therapists there. We're female dominated. What they actually are looking for is flexibility in work. And so if we can say, you can give us a couple of hours a week, great. You can support, you know, this number of schools during that time, rather than you need to work full time, you need to work part time, you need to be in at 9 o'clock, back at 5 o'clock when, you know.
I absolutely love this. This is
yeah. So it's, you know, like, I suppose we were coming from both sides. It's like we were trying to solve the problem for families being able to get that support when they need it, when they actually have that first feeling that, like, my child's having meltdowns at home. You can't wait a couple of months and then bring them to a clinic and expect that to be solved in that moment. It takes a collaborative approach. They are the expert on their child, and you're sharing your expertise, and it needs to be done before it gets to that crisis point where stress, parents are struggling with their own anxiety, the child has developed kind of habitual behaviors around this. You know, they need that supportive piece. And so it's nice when you can actually offer that when they need it. And the same with schools. I can't, like, it's unbelievable at the moment, the emphasis on schools to cater for the diversity in their classrooms. Like, they're expected not only to meet the curriculum education needs, and you probably know this, my whole family are primary school teachers, so I totally understand their way of thinking, but, you know, they're also landed then with like reports, with programs to follow through for speech development and motor skills, but no one is actually supporting them in, you have this window of opportunity in the day. This is how we naturally embed some of these strategies into what you're already doing, and empowering teachers that their role is education, but these will impact on education, and this is how you build it into the routine. And I suppose it takes a level of expertise to be able to do that, but it's been really positive, kind of strengths-based affirming work. And so far, the, you know, the feedback has been excellent from schools. So
that's really cool. No, like, I find it fascinating, because I remember, like, when we were younger, it was a case of basically shut up, do your little bits of maths or whatever it was. And like, I even remember myself in school, I was quiet and shy up until transition year. Kind of missed that guy, to be honest. transition year happened, and it was like, oh shit, there's actually stuff out there to do. And then obviously, like, I went down the product design route in college.
Yeah.
And then essentially that kind of kicked off. I like projects. I like doing things. I like bang. I have to be doing something. Whereas I always found, you know, in the early years in school, it was just, I'm bored. Just sit there and be quiet. But like, you can even see it now. Like I'm seeing it with my own niece and nephew, that those, the things that they do now are way, there's way more. But I can imagine that's an awful lot more pressure on teachers and a lot more that they have to do and a lot more categories that they have to fit in. And like, essentially what you're saying is they don't have the support they need to be able to do it effectively.
Oh, absolutely. And like, then you've on top of that. So what you're even like at the moment, let's say they've rolled out like a new curriculum. So teachers now have to learn a new way of teaching maths where there's more manipulative, there's more, you know, things that kids can use to suit different types of learners. So they're trying to kind of reframe that, okay, this is how we educate. But then the other side of it is you have diversity in your classroom where traditional, let's say, behavioral management techniques that you use in your classroom suddenly are not working with these children. Children are dysregulated. They're not able to sit. They're not able to focus. You're not meeting their educational needs. And then it's causing a disruption in the flow of the classroom in general. And that can happen. So teachers, sometimes feel like a lot of what they're having to do is meet the regulation needs. And what I mean by that is helping children focus and attend and meet their sensory needs without maybe having that knowledge base behind it. And sometimes when I talk with teachers, it's more of a coaching model. I'm not lecturing them what they should have been doing. It's more like, really interesting, you're already doing it, and this is why it's working, and this is why you need to sustain that. And so sometimes it is, I do a lot of reframing. For parents, I do a lot of reframing around the traditional bringing their child to see someone for a block of intervention can be incredibly helpful for certain areas, but they also need to be reframed in understanding that they can do so much at home. There's so much research behind parent coaching, you know, empowering the parents to be able to work on certain skills. And the same with teachers, like empowering and coaching teachers. There's so much research around teacher efficacy, helping them to see what they can actually manage rather than just feeling totally overwhelmed and burdened with all of the child's needs having to be met in the classroom. And like, there's autism classes opening in every school. Oftentimes teachers are not offered additional training and are expected to be able to cope in those settings and cater for the diverse needs of the children. And so, you know, it's such a tricky situation. I just feel like there needs to have that lovely multidisciplinary approach around it. And so we're hoping to solve a bit of that problem anyway.
Yeah, no, like it is fascinating because you definitely like, I know, like, we could definitely point to one or two people that we know from secondary school that definitely, like, fell through the cracks, and, like, having a platform like that could have made a huge difference to, like, their school life. Because I can imagine for, like, the students as well, it must be very frustrating, you know, kids as young as, you know, 8, 9, 10, and they know that the way they operate is different to the rest of the classroom. And, like, that must be very frustrating for them as well. So, like, from your own experience so far, are you finding that the kids get more engaged then as well after they get the support?
Because the thing is, like, you know, like I used to always say that I'd have a great relationship with the kids that used to come see me, but I'd only see them like once every few weeks, every month. It's the adults that are surrounding them on a daily basis. So like their parents, you know, SNAs, or which are now known as ANAs, or, you know, teachers. A lot of what is needed as well to support students is an understanding, you know, so a lot of what I do is education. So also we talk about, you know, even double empathy, which is, you know, understanding it from both point of views, in terms of you might have a neurodivergent and autistic child in your class and you're neurotypical. So rather than you coming in and saying you need to change this, you need to do it in this way, it's actually seeing it from both sides and perspective taking in that situation. And so a lot of what we would do would be that kind of education piece around shifting the focus out of what would have been a very traditional compliance behavioral model, in terms of you need to do this for me, you need to please the teacher, you need to, you know, do this first and then you'll get yard. It was rather than an intrinsic motivation, a regulatory model of practice, which we use, which is strengths-based, in that you should want to do this for yourself and, you know, let's pitch it at the right level for you. So like you said, in school, and one person could write a page in 10 minutes and another person can write 3 sentences, and that can be down to their processing, the way they move their hands, tiredness levels. And that's where that differentiation needs to come in. Not look at the person beside you, they wrote a page. That's a comparative, which isn't a fair one. And I think that's where we're trying to look at that inclusive education piece in terms of how you differentiate, how you use reflective language, how you kind of instill those mantras in children so that they grow up to have, you know, their mental health intact, that they have those coping skills. And like you said, there's people that we can think of in secondary school. Unfortunately, it's often mental health services that might be the first to actually take note that there's quite deep ingrained, you know, trauma, or, you know, their coping skills, maybe there's unmet sensory needs, you know, undiagnosed neurodivergence. And so, you know, it's that piece that we're really trying to get in there at the beginning, you know, that lovely preventative work kind of.
It's proactive rather than reactive. I think Absolutely. That's the approach that needs to be taken, especially with an awful lot of things. Like I've even seen it, like I do a lot of like football coaching and stuff like that. I can definitely see it in like the younger guys. Like the older guys that are in the team, they're very much, it's black and white. It is what it is. Whereas the younger guys, there's so many like nuances in the way they even operate, or the way you communicate with them. Like you have one guy and it's almost like you can't be critical. It's almost like what do you call it? Like a criticism sandwich. It's like you're very good at this, do better at this because you're also great at this. And then there's another guy who you need to kind of almost physically show a pattern and go, I need you to actually do this. And it's understanding that there's so many different spaces.
Absolutely, and different learning styles. And exactly what you're describing there, it could be a child that has, you know, motor planning difficulties, and you're like, I actually need to show them how to do it rather than just do it. And also, like you said, like communication styles, some children are very literal, some children can kind of read between the lines. And so it comes down to communication, doesn't it? It's a really tricky one. Like you need to be constantly adopting. And I suppose what I'm always talking to, like you said, anyone who works with kids and young people in general, so like you could be a trainer, you could be, you know, babysitter, it's to try and allow yourself to be curious rather than jumping to kind of like, well, they should just be able to do it this way. Being black and white yourself, you need to be flexible and also be curious that if a child isn't doing what you've asked, rather than thinking, you know, they're just being lazy or they're just being bold or they're not engaging, is to also think, could there be maybe a reason for this? Maybe they're actually like not understanding what I said. Maybe this function of behavior is to communicate that they're actually finding this really tricky, or that there's a skill difficulty here. And so I'm always kind of emphasizing that oftentimes behind behavior, there is a function, and try not to just constantly be going down that behavioral management route of like, we need you to comply, we need you to comply. Because it works with some kids, but it really doesn't work with a lot. And we know that it doesn't work with a lot of adolescents. So
I think that's just an age factor that they don't want to hear. I think it's that, it is that thing of early access, early like proactive thinking. So I guess like was it last year, the year before, that you won the award for the Tech for Good in the Irish?
That was last year, that we won. With the Technology Ireland Awards. Tech for Good. I actually had to think there because I was very early stages of being pregnant. I was like, was that last year? It was last year. So I have a smallie now who's 7 months. So I was trying to work out, was that last year? Or was it just at the start of the previous year? It might have been. But yeah, it was the Tech for Good category. Wow, we were actually blown away to win that. We were at a table with such incredible companies and really established. And, you know, we were quite, you know, startup phases, but it was great that they could see the potential, you know, and it was such a brilliant opportunity to network and to meet others at it. And that was the thing, I suppose, when you're kind of at those tables, you learn so much from, you make such brilliant contacts, you know. And even last year, then I would have done, you know, the Going for Growth as well. And that was really nice to meet other female entrepreneurs and kind of chat and make connections. And, you know, I think that networking piece is so important, because especially in this space that we are with healthcare, it can be, you know, we're doing our stages, we're piloting it, we're seeing, but sometimes I can get a little bit stuck because I'm a therapist working kind of in the company rather than on the company. And so I need to take that step back and actually have that time to reflect on like, where are we going? How do we build this more? How do we build out the team more? You know, what do we need to be looking at to kind of refine services? And so all those opportunities have been great for that. And it's just, you know, we all need a little bit of positive reinforcement, you know, so when you win an award like that, it's great to be like, other people can see that there's a need here, and you know, that we're hopefully doing good. And that's really important to us, is that we're not just like having a service and kind of, you know, oh, well, parents need the service and we're putting it out there. We're actually trying to get feedback and improve the service so that this is a quality service, something that has longevity, you know, it's research backed, like therapists are happy, families are happy, schools are happy. And that takes time.
Of course. Actually, it's a nice segue into, because you mentioned this, you've actually mentioned earlier in just a moment ago, but being like a woman in the tech space, obviously you were mentioning about the therapist having the flexibility and that it's very female driven. And even just even yourself being, you know, a pregnant founder last year and like the pressures of being a mother and running a business and then all of these operations, like, I'm never going to understand this, so I'm just going to sit back and let you explain how the hell you balance everything and just what it meant to you to be able to be in these spaces and network and collaborate.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's incredible. And like, I was heavily pregnant coming up to the end of like the going for growth as well. And still, I suppose it's that you're at that capacity of like, my brain is about to go through a change as well. I'm about to become a mother. But, you know, I think it's that flexibility piece has been so key. And I think that's what's is often reinforced in other like tech corporate companies as well, is that, you know, women need this flexibility. They need to be able to come back to work. And I think I absolutely had to come back earlier. And I think, you know, especially with like the state maternity leave and stuff, I mean, you know, how, you know, a director or somebody self-employed, you need to like come back, you need to be ahead of the game in terms of like when you're going to. I've great family support, which has been so helpful, and that flexibility has made such a difference, because like I'm a mom first and then, you know, everything else comes after that. You literally just are constantly thinking, but it's really pushed me to see as well the gap in how are these families feeling, you know, and also how therapists in the past were feeling when they were told this is the set time, you have to be back, you're going to be a 9 to 6, there's no flexibility. No wonder they were dropping down to part-time contracts or taking a step away from the profession and thinking, you know, what else could I do during this time, because it's quite physical and emotionally taxing. You know, you're working with families, you're working with, you know, really complex needs. And as a result, you know, it's hard sometimes to be that 100% give that. And I think, you know, there needs to be that lovely flexibility and an encouragement to move more female entrepreneurs forward in this space. Like, there's unbelievable knowledge. I couldn't get over it. Like when I was in Going for Growth, like the experiences of people, you know, how they've kind of like had to navigate the system and how it's much harder in certain sectors, obviously, than others. And I think that, you know, like, it's kind of unfortunate that when I talk to very entrepreneurial therapists or women, they'll often might say, you know, I'm kind of nervous to do it because of not losing my mat leave, you know, or losing those supports. And absolutely, I can get that. Like if I was able to, you know, take my mat leave and take the extra time. But you also have to factor in that I was happy to come back and support families again. Absolutely. I love spending time with Finn and being with him. But it's also nice to have that work-life balance that I can still use my expertise and that I just didn't decide, well, I have to take a step back. And I think with Gabadoo, that's what we're really trying to do, is utilize a lot of the expertise that unfortunately had left the profession, had retired from the profession, bring it back to the forefront to say, you know, there is this flexibility. Families need your support. We need your expertise and how we can kind of morph that. And so I'm really passionate about the fact that these are female dominated professions and that I don't want to be pushed to the wayside in terms of, you know, the access gets so poor that the profession almost becomes outdated, you know. So we need to kind of drive on with the time, and hopefully tech can really provide that for us, I think.
That's really cool. Now, because like it's even something that like I've definitely noticed like over the last few years. Like actually, oddly enough, like a lot of the companies I've worked in have been very female driven, which has been really nice. But it's definitely something I've seen around like the mat leave and stuff. Personally, for me, I think that's something at government level really needs to be improved. Those structures, whether that's like a blended parent system where both get longer time off so that they can support each other. At the end of the day, isn't that the whole point? That everybody, you know, everybody,
absolutely,
each other up. It shouldn't just be all on you to go, right, I need to come back early because, or else, like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, is that like when you have your own company and when you're working on it, you're kind of like, you know, you're passionate about it. But I can see how other people are, that if they're going back into a company, that they don't really feel supported or heard. that's going to really impact on their job satisfaction. It's also going to impact hugely on them kind of turning up on the day. And something that we would have reached out to before, even for Gabadoo, was HR, corporate companies, that we were also supporting them and understanding what could they put in place from a HR structure to support parents. Because you have a lot of parents in these big corporate companies who are being sent, you know, appointments for their child. Their child might need OT, they might need speech, they might have medical appointments. And so what they don't need is, you know, I know this sounds terrible, but, you know, like a well-being session in work, like that's not going to solve their issues. Yeah. What they need is flexibility to say, like, flexibility around time. Like you said, flexibility around certain weeks maybe need to be shorter, or working from home, that blended approach. But it needs to be actually accepted, not written in policy. And then why is that person leaving early? It really needs to, it's the culture of it needs to change. And I think, you know, there's a lack of understanding as well. If a person has a sick child at home and the creche won't take them, the level of stress that falls back if they don't have that family structure. And so I honestly do think that HR should be aware of that. Like, do my employees have family structures? Do they not? Like, and it's just ridiculous from a government level how there isn't proper childcare in some of these areas, yeah. You know, in big corporate companies for families so that they can be close by, you know, rather than having to leave at 6 o'clock in the morning. They can't collect kids till 6 or 7 in the evening, you know, and it's, I can even feel how, like when I came back, it was just so lovely. So much of my work is online. I could be around so much, but like your anxiety would absolutely peak if you were away for huge chunks of the day. And like, that's not good either for maternal mental health or, you know, so I suppose the cycle is there in terms of there does need to be, I think in Ireland though, there is positive change happening. Yeah. Absolutely. But I think when it comes to like directors and those that are self-employed, there's still a little bit of growth that I think can happen to support, you know, female, you know, people in that area.
No, it makes it when you say it makes an awful lot of sense. So like, I just don't understand how above don't see these things. It's like, just talk, you know, there's all these programs, there's all these, you know, systems. Talk to the people who are actually within the system.
That's exactly it. But that's often overlooked, is actually talking to the people who have experience in this area to give proper, it's not that I'm saying that we should be paid for a certain chunk, but, you know, for instance, like with, you know, the state mat leave, for example, you know, it says that you can't return to any work or, you know, that maternity leave is cut off. But, you know, if you think about like from a director point of view, there's just so much work that needs to be ongoing. And so they're not really differentiating based on where your work is. If you're working under a company and you're self-employed, but for a lot of people, they're not the director. And I think they need to start looking at that differentiation of support in terms of, you know, not everyone, people will be coming back in a graded way, and how we can support people within that structure as well. So yeah, there's a bit of growth to be done, but you know what? There's some brilliant people in that space. And even after attending the Going for Growth, wow, you know, like they, you know, are really kind of advocating for what's needed. And at the same time, like you said, there are a lot of companies with females at the top, but it's just important that they don't feel that they have to sacrifice other aspects of their life. And that can be challenging.
And this is like, I think you're a great person to talk to for this because of the, you know, the two companies that you're founder of. I mean, like, you have a very good understanding of the system, the parent and the children. It's like, is there, so I guess, as I said, like, you've two strands at the moment where it's parent focused and school focused. Does that school focus hopefully lead into kind of like, you know, an overarching, this is now part of all schools, or is it kind of something that school to school will choose it themselves?
Absolutely. And I suppose that's what we're always striving for. Where we're at the moment really is, with my OTME, it's kind of school to school, you know, word of mouth. We have tons of schools signed up to the CPD. We absolutely think something like that should be rolled out from the Department of Education for all schools so that they'd have access to it. Or we may be able to look kind of for, you know, corporate funding or something outside of that to fund for schools. We don't feel like schools should have to pay for that, but ultimately, you know, I suppose somebody has to pay at the beginning. But we would love if that was kind of like that giving back to the community, that, you know, sustainability piece, you know, that piece around kind of community good. From a Gabadoo point of view, absolutely. We're always looking for avenues for this type of service to be put into schools, to be part of the Department of Education's rollout of therapeutic services for schools, how that should look. And I know that in the past, like the NCSE had been working on putting OTs and SLTs into schools. But the factor which it comes down to is the expertise, finding the right expertise of the therapist, but also something that's scalable. You know, once again, we're down into if you're putting a therapist into a school physically, whereas with Gabidoo, we're trying to use a blended approach. I have a lot of experience in this area and probably, you know, a private OT for 10 years, that you can do a really nice blended approach. A large amount can be done through collaborative consultancy online. And then you can do that on-site visit. You know, you send a therapist out, they meet the school, but you don't need to have a therapist on site the whole time. A lot of what teachers look for is that quick advice, that support. And so we've trialed, you know, we're piloting this, we're building the team out, but ultimately, absolutely, we just should see this as a service that's across the board. I mean, they've had school-based OTs in America for years, but even they're looking at rechanging the service because it would have been seen as taking children out of the class to do the intervention and putting them back into the class. And I would have done that in Australia, whereas now we're looking at natural settings, inclusivity, coaching the teacher to be able to cater for the needs within the classroom environment, everyone working together so that children feel heard and their needs are met by the adults that are with them every day. So, like, absolutely, as you said, we'd be looking for other avenues because schools are so tight on money. Like, they have such a small budget for this.
Yeah, no, that makes, unless it's like, you know, the obvious, like, private schools, of course, naturally.
Yes. Schools,
and like, actually, it's probably a good question. Are they the kind of schools who are more likely to dive in on a service like this straight away? Or is it more like the public schools putting their hands up, screaming, going, we need help, some, you know?
It's actually a massive mix. I would say probably more public. We have an awful amount of DESH schools on it that have high behavioural needs, high emotional dysregulation, and they'll often get parents involved. So we have a real mixture of schools, but no, it's not privatised at all. It's actually, I would say, more the public schools. And I suppose it's that utilization of their budget. Some schools are given a bigger budget than others. Some are really small schools, but we adjust that for them. They only pay per consultation. It's not that we're saying, you know, you have to give this upfront payment initially. We're looking down the line, maybe we will have to have some kind of charge for the platform. But for schools at the moment, they literally just pay per consultation. So even if they're only, you know, doing a few of them, it should be more manageable. But it does come down to budget. And I don't know where some of the schools seem to find, you know, a lot more than others. And I suppose the biggest thing is that they're seeing value in the service. Like, we had a principal give us a review the other day, and it was just that it was that whole look at another person's perspective, another, you know, avenue around supporting a child that they just felt exhausted by using certain techniques that were just not working, you know. And that's so, I can, you know, understand that from the student's point of view, like you said earlier, how challenging that must be and how unhappy they must feel in school when they don't feel seen and heard. And I suppose that's a big part of what I'm trying to do, is advocate for the needs of the family as well. It's not that I'm employed by the school. Oftentimes I'm coming in as that kind of middle ground person, you know, to advocate that this is probably how the child is experiencing the situation and helping them understand about trauma and about, you know, how we can alleviate that. So, you know, it's an ongoing process, but I think what's lovely is that a lot of the therapists that I've onboarded have brilliant expertise, have a lot of experience in this area, and that's what it comes down to, really.
I mean, like, even the more you talk about it, like I'm thinking here, I'm like, you hear the government programs where they're spending millions on whitewater fucking rafting in Dublin, you're like, lads, there's plenty of kids here that could actually just get the help you need, and then that gives you... It's almost like this short-sightedness. It's like, you give these kids like the facilities that they need at that age. Look at what will happen later. Invest in the future. Because I know somebody that like I interacted with when we were younger, and they would, you know, they were the type of person who did need the help, and then when they got to college, it was just like bang.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck. And see where
their ability actually wasn't shown at all in school, you know. And like, I actually am always kind of floored by the amount of people whose experience was so negative going to school, you know, that they really actually just had such a negative experience, you know. And I suppose it's looking at that piece, and it's interesting. A lot of the times when I talk to the kids, the years that they have a really positive experience, it's nothing about what was done, it's all about the relationship. About the relationship of that teacher got me, I liked that teacher, or I had a really good SNA, or, you know, I was able to express my interests, you know. And at the end of the day, I think that's forgotten sometimes by the system. And look, I have, like, the principals are seeing this need. As you said, really, it needs to come from the top. We have so many principals being like, we need to get this support, we need to get in. So everyone's kind of doing their role, but really, at the end of the day, you need that kind of blanket kind of rollout of supports like this. But also, I think the Department of Education is often looking for this, but they're not sure, this isn't their area, how to scale this kind of a service. Sure. Like, how can they meet the needs? Maybe they're trying to meet the needs, let's say, of, you know, special schools, but how do you actually meet the needs of all schools? And so there was a change in the structure of the health system as well, so that there's now kind of different team structures. But what sure. happened with that is therapists that would have been linked with schools in the past, now that changed. So there's been a huge rejig of services. So there was a lot of anxiety from families and schools around that. And so now everyone's kind of relearning away, reframing how services are going to be provided. And I think the piece that's been missing is that education piece. Everyone feels a little bit in the dark. The families are suddenly, we've lost whatever services we were getting. We don't know when we're going to get it. So there's a lot of pent up anxiety and you know, anger about it. And I think parents are sick of waiting. But unfortunately, at the end of the day, being reliant on a system that is not there and is never going to be there, you know, really, we need to reframe that thinking about how they can access those supports they need. And so, look, it's going to be the long road, but we're kind of, you know, we're getting there. And I like, this is something I'm really passionate about. Like, I've always worked in this space, and it's something that we're going to give our best go at. And ultimately, it's the families, the kids that are always kind of at the forefront of what we do and trying to maximize on, I suppose, the scalability of the service as well.
True. Now, this is so, like, if you, like, you've come an awful long way over the last few years, as you said, like, you know, six years ago now, 2018, Jesus, the years ago, but like, for making videos of how to tie a shoelace, like, the fact that that was something that was so, that was needed and wasn't there, to where you are now, like, that's an amazing 6 years. So I guess, like, one of the last questions I'll ask you before we wrap up is, what does 2024 look like? What are we hoping, where are we hoping to go this year?
I'm hoping that, well, particularly for Gabadoo, I'm hoping that we've got our product market fit in terms of, like, this is the service, and I hope that we can just really build this out even further and kind of advocate, educate more. We're really building up, like, what this service looks like. So there's a really nice tech side to it. So when schools, you know, come on and they book in their consultations, the therapist does the video consultation, but then we have this lovely follow-up piece, which is our GABA plan. So we get sent that through our software system to the school, so that they have the strategies that were discussed, but we have this bank of resources around videos cutting through it. So we're really trying to build out a very efficient service as well, something that not only, you know, looks good, but also works seamlessly. So I suppose 2024 for Gabadoo, we're really just going to be building out the team even further, you know, getting more schools on board. And with MyOTME, it's this CPD piece. We're going to, like, expand this even further. I'm hoping to kind of reframe a lot of schools' thinkings. And I'm also rolling out, you know, a lot of training. It's with the Well Schools program. It's with a principal, Dave Cashman. And so it's a real new way at kind of, I suppose, supporting behaviors within the school. It's more holistic, it's trauma informed. So I suppose in general, a lot of what's going to be happening is reframing education and moving forward with the services that we've now kind of started to refine, which is very exciting, because I think when you're constantly pivoting and being like, maybe we need to do this, it can become very like, are we going to find that right fit for Gabadoo? But I'm hoping that this is it. So
no, I think you're good. I don't even think I know you're going to, like, it's an amazing idea. And like, I even know one of my mates, like, they've got a kid, and I can tell you right now, the second that mother sees the video, she's going to be going kicking down the door of the school going, how don't you know about this stuff? Like, seriously, it's so obvious.
Yes.
It's frustrating.
Yes. And that's the thing. And that's what's nice. Like, parents can come on as well. And I suppose anything, like the tying shoelaces video to the service that is Gabadoo, technically it's a simplified, you know, like, vision, I suppose, in terms of like what's actually needed. But that's where the beauty is in it. It's like the beauty is in the simple of actually, we've always known the service is needed, and we've just kind of found a way to package it and to actually provide it, I guess.
Good. I think as the schools are ready for it now. So this is, I'm really excited to see where you land this time of year, to be honest. Like, because even I knew little bits coming into it, but even just over the last 40 minutes, I'm like, the more I'm hearing about it, the more I'm like, how, like, this is going to be class. So I'm really excited to see where you go next year. So if there's anybody out there right now who wants to see the platforms, if there's parents who want to like reach out, where do they go? And if there's schools out there that are looking to get more information, where can they find you? Where can they get access to the sites? And I suppose before we wrap it up.
Yeah. So I think the best thing is head to our website. So Gabadoo is G-A-B-A-D-O-O. So Gabadoo.com or myotme.com. And you'll see all the information there. For Gabadoo, you can actually book in a call with Sean. He'll speak you through what kind of resources we have available for you. So we really give that kind of individualized personal approach. So because we know that people need education and kind of build trust as well. You can also find us Gabadoo platform on Instagram or MyOTME on Instagram and MyOTME on YouTube as well for that tying laces video if you need to learn.
Well, I'm actually going to, in the description on the podcast, I'm going to link that video in.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for having me on anyway, John.
Honestly, anytime. So just for, before I wrap it up, I'll just say for our own side, goosed_ie is where you're going to find us on pretty much every social media platform, including Threads. We're on there now as well. We're on YouTube right now, and this is going to be available on Spotify. So until next time, good luck, goodbye, and good morning, good night, whatever time you're listening. I don't even know how to sign these off anymore. So yeah, goodbye, and I'm going to press the end of the stream.